Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Fitter and Faster Coach's Corner. As always, I'm your host, Mike Murray. Today, I am so honored and so grateful to have one of my coaches, one of my mentors in the sport, somebody who has basically dedicated his whole life to our sport of swimming, one of the most prolific writers in our sport, and somebody who understands the nuances and the different things that affect so many different teams, coaches, parents, athletes. Chuck, you really have a great perspective on it all, and we're so fortunate to have you join us this morning.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
I want to jump right into it, Coach, because you are somebody that has a passion for writing. You're somebody who has a passion for sharing the unique history of our sport. You are a contributing author to the Eddie Reese book that everybody loved, Coaching Swimmers, Teaching Life, and They Won Gold was another one of my favorites. Of course, my all-time favorite book in swimming, Four Champions, One Gold Medal, which I think I've read probably 5 or 6 times, and used the appendix in that book as a young coach developing my own philosophy of training. And then recently, we're thrilled to share your new book, How to Be a Great Swim Parent. And I think that title is so beautiful in its simplicity, because that is something that every coach, every program, every family in the United States should take some time and read. It's a great buy, $13. It's a perfect opportunity for parents to go through your experiences, your observations, and kind of share with their families what they can learn from that. So the first thing I want to do, Coach, is I want to ask you, what was the inspiration behind the book, How to Be a Great Swim Parent?
I think, it's a building process of being 20 years old, a junior in college, coaching college full-time, or coaching club swimming full-time while I was captain of the water polo team at my university, while I was going to school full-time, and being in such angst when it was time to talk to parents about something that was going on with their son or daughter, that I ended up in the hospital or a doctor's office once. And when I came out, he wouldn't tell me exactly what was wrong. I said, "Do I have an ulcer?" And he just kind of smirked at me, said, "You're too young to have an ulcer." But those conversations were so difficult to have. And I went through about 20 years of club coaching. I went through another 20 years or so of college coaching. And in those college coaching years, you have a different sort of experience of now recruiting kids, sitting at a dining room table with mom and dad and trying to sell your program. But also every summer, I was running a summer swim camp and at Rutgers and then later on. And my first year running that camp, one of my assistant coach, Kirsten Hines, said to me, "You know, you're really good with the parents. We should make time for you to just talk with them." And so we carved out this 45-minute period, the beginning of camp, kids got separated, and I just talked to the parents. And I stopped doing that camp after 24 years, and I thought to myself, that was 24 years of thinking about arguments to make to parents to help them help their kids. And I think I should put it in a book. I think I should put those arguments and those thoughts together in a book, expand upon it a little bit. But, you know, it's purposely not very long, trying to be concise, where a mom or dad could sit in the stands at a swim meet and in less than 2 hours, either listen to the audio book or read the book. And I actually have a friend of mine that said he walked across his pool deck the other day, and one of his dads that was really a difficult dad was sitting there reading this book. So that in itself is a huge win.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, that's probably every club coach's, college coach, whatever developmental level we're working with, that's a dream, right? When you can see your parents actively involved in their own education in the sport.
Yes, and I think it's important to say that it is up to the coach of a club team to make that happen. And by that, I mean to develop a proactive system of how you're going to educate your parents how you're going to bring them into your program, how you're going to sustain them. A couple of examples. When I coached at the Wilton Y, we had three, this was before much with the internet or anything like this back in the 80s, three nights, the beginning of the season, every parent or a parent of every swimmer had to come to one of those meetings to hear for an hour about what the season was going to be like, what we were going to be doing and so forth. When I went to the Cincinnati Pepsi Marlins next, we did the same thing. And it was kind of uncomfortable because Dr. Rodenbaugh, who fathered Olympian Kim and national champion Mook and Olympic trial finalist Greg, now the coach at SMU, he was president of the club. He said, "Chuck, you mean I have to go to that meeting or my kid can't be on the team?" I said, "Doc, if you don't have to go, then nobody has to go. So you got to go." But he had a great story to tell about, which is in the book, Chapter 6, which Dr. Rodenbaugh is still rolling along at 96 or so years old. And I shared with his daughter yesterday, the day before, through Facebook, and I think she's going to get it to him. But he told all our parents the story over and over. He had seven kids, I think, and the first one, summer league meet, gets to the wall, just misses winning a race. Doc is just walking in from his dental practice, and he looks at his son and said, "Why didn't you go a little faster? You missed winning by this much." And his son went from being excited about being at a swim meet to being in tears. And he realized right then and there, he had put his expectations and a standard of winning for his son that he never was going to be able to live up to in the long run, when he should have just appreciated the effort. And that's one of the lessons in the book, is parents can create opportunities or they can create obligations. Creating obligations is by praising the outcome rather than the effort.
I really like that, Coach. And I know that one thing you talked about a lot at Rutgers when I was an athlete was you can always control your attitude and your effort. Is that something that you want parents to consider too, as they're working through these processes with their kids of understanding the developmental progress in the sport?
Sure. You know, I sent you an early on copy of the book, and since then I added a few things, and I'm about to send you probably today, actually, a finished final copy, but I added an epilogue in it. And that was prompted by some of the folks that read it and said, you know, we have other issues like the internet and things like that that I wanted to add. But then I thought about this story from George Block that he used to tell, that he had a swimmer on his team that was so slow that in swim meets, we've all had this. So he's swimming, the boy's swimming a 1650, and he's going down one way of the pool and everybody else is finishing the opposite way. He's going the wrong direction, basically, compared to the other people in the race. In practice, the same thing would happen. And so he ended up nicknaming, or the team nicknamed him Wrong Way. That was the boy's name now with the team. And Wrong Way ended up enlisting in the military, ended up on a naval ship. Terrible weather or conditions or conflict. I'm not sure exactly the circumstances, but he was the best swimmer on that ship. And he was able to get in the water and save the lives of a number of different servicemen. And parents don't appreciate necessarily the automatic outcomes that you're going to get: cardiovascular system, strength, emotional development, but being able to save your life in the water and being able to save a friend's life. You know, I watched my daughter at a fourth grade, maybe sixth grade party at a little lake. All the kids were on a raft, and Annie was not a great swimmer, swam till she was 13, went 29 in the 50 free, just as perspective, at about 12 years old. But they were called to dinner, and she leaves the raft and she swims towards the beach, the shore. And she turns around after she's about two thirds of the way there and looks for everybody else. And they're 30 feet behind her. She's not a great swimmer. She's just a competent swimmer. And just in that moment, I could see the difference between kids that haven't had an experience in competitive swimming and those that have. And flash forward about 30 years, a little boy, 4 years old, a few years ago, drowned in that lake. You know, that it's so important to learn to swim, but we don't appreciate just the pure ability to swim and enjoy the lakes, rivers, oceans, boats, by becoming a competent and good swimmer that other people miss out on.
So important, Coach. And when we consider, you know, all of the wonderful aquatic facilities we have across this country, and many of them don't have teams that use those. So, and I know that that's something that you're really passionate about. I think one thing that I want to draw is, you know, there's a lot of connections between the other work that you've done in this book, particularly a little rubric test that you had many of the athletes take when I was in college, which is, are you a champion of yourself? And you include the pyramid in your book this time around, the pyramid where at the top it's champion and at the bottom there's opportunity, talent, and competitiveness. Why is that important for parents to understand?
Oh boy. You know, we really get confused a lot of times when we talk about self-image. And I've got to digress slightly to tell you that in the dedication of the book I'm going to send you, one of the names in there is John Urbanicek. And when I was 20 years old, we would go down and swim long course in Anaheim. My team in Redlands, California didn't have a long course pool. And that was where John's team trained. So I got to meet him, and he invited me to a seminar called Action for Excellence, Jeff Goforth, Self-Image Psychology. I sat there and wrote 44 pages of notes, just a whole yellow pad. And ever since that day, I had a mom type them up. I still have her typed copy of those notes. I try to teach my team every year those concepts, including when you were at Rutgers. And from doing that, it just became so ingrained in me, and being a father and being a coach and hopefully being a friend and so forth. But the idea is that difficulties and failures and disappointments are going to happen. And that's not a bad thing. And if you, as a coach, have the wherewithal to be able to say to a parent in the right moment, have you ever had a really difficult experience where you felt like failing? And if you have, how much of a difference has that made to you in the lessons you've learned and helped you to where you are today? Almost every parent will nod and say, you're right. I remember this disaster and I thought my life was going to end, but it really helped me get better. And then the punchline is, why don't you allow your child to go through the same experience? It's just a swimming race. It may be slow. It may be bad. The coach will talk about the swimming race. The coach will help them with technique, pace, training, what have you. But you're in charge of helping your child move on and helping your child learn from that from a general life standpoint. There's going to be other things in your life, honey, that are going to be difficult. And you're going to look back at this one day and it's not going to be such a big deal. You're a great kid. You're going to practice. This is where the Dr. Rodenbaugh lessons come in. Praise the effort. You're going to practice. You're listening to your coach. You're working hard. You're doing all the right things. I'm so proud of you for the effort you're making. You can always be proud of your child's effort.
There's no doubt about that. And, you know, you talk a lot about self-image in this book. And, you know, one thing that you used to say all the time, and you've included it in this book, is winners see what they want, losers see what they're trying to avoid, right? And I think my experience as a coach in this sport, I see so many athletes looking at an opportunity to really change themselves in a positive way. Instead of focusing on that piece, Coach, they're worried about what they're trying to avoid. What am I going to look like if I fail? What if I don't get this qualifying time? What if I don't make the zone team this year? Talk a little bit about how you've advised parents to handle those situations.
Well, in this in these seminars, I would pretty much talk about that fact and self-image and how it works. And there is a cycle that we all go through, that we start talking to ourselves, and, you know, each of us, our own worst enemy. You dope, you stub your toe, what an idiot, wear your shoes, trip on the stairs wearing flip-flops. You did it again, you jackass, you know, that kind of thing. So part of it is trying to help the swimmer, the child, control their own self-talk and not beat themselves up. But then as a mother or father, you've got to realize that you're not an expert in this area. You don't, at least I don't, go to my dentist and say, this is how I want you to fill my cavity, clean my teeth, do whatever. That's not my job. That's her job. I walk in and she is the one that's a professional in that area. And I think parents need to look out for their child's self-esteem and help support their self-talk in talking themselves up. But they can't try to pave every pathway to be smooth so that they never stumble and they never have that challenge. And I think that's where the gray area really gets in that a lot of people have difficulty with. I asked just a mother in our swim school that was bringing her kids to extra things, extra lessons. I said, why are you bringing them so much? And they said, we really want him to make the swim team this fall. And I gave her the same example of what I gave you earlier. I asked her about if she had ever had a disappointment. And, basically, your son may not make the swim team, but he's making the effort to make the swim team, and that's a great thing. And he can make that effort again, and eventually it will work out. Michael Jordan got cut from his high school basketball team. Matt Biondi never made his high school state championships until he was a junior in high school. And he won 9 Olympic gold medals. You know, we're all at different paces, and especially boys can blossom way later than others. Everybody isn't a Katie Ledecky and a Michael Phelps where you're seeing their success at 15 years old.
Yeah, it's a great point. And really, Coach, even with Katie, I mean, we saw her at just the national select camp level, had never made a national junior team, going into London, and then did what she did in London. So, you know, right. It's really possible. And when, you know, you think back on some of your experiences, you coached athletes, Joe Hudepohl, Aaron McIntyre, Kazmira Wick, Kelly Harrigan, just to name a few. What were some of the attributes that those kids had and getting to know their parents a little bit that helped make them so successful?
Well, I put the story of Kelly's mom in a video and tried to share it with coaches. And I actually had a friend of mine, an old high school friend, email me or text me this morning an article from the Boston Globe about parenting. And he said, I like the Dairy Queen example better than what they're saying here. But that story was that Kelly was 8 years old. She finished a race and the official came up to her and said, you've been DQ'd. And she went to her mom and said, what does DQ'd mean? And mom said, it means we're going to Dairy Queen. And just moving on from that moment of disappointment that the coach would take care of fixing her strokes or finishes or whatever it was to make her legal and everything else would be all right. You know, the parents of Kazmira, Aaron, almost everybody that I've coached that have been really good have just been extremely supportive of the effort their kids are making, very seldom putting excessive expectations on the results. And, you know, I interviewed Katie Ledecky after her 428, I think, 4,500 free. We had an interview for Swimming World magazine article I was writing, and it was early in the morning after morning practice. Wonderful that she was willing to do that. And what I got out of that and wrote in the article was she had such a cocoon of family around her, cousins, brother, uncles, aunts that all supported her and loved her. She couldn't fail. She could not fail. She could get fifth, but she still had her family. And I think, you know, for almost all those good kids that I've coached, their parents really stayed more in the background and did the right things to get them to practice and help facilitate their efforts. But they weren't out in front trying to push and pull for their kids.
Yeah, and that's so important in terms of your son or your daughter's longevity in the sport. Do they love it? Are they having fun? Is this an experience that they want to continue to go back to? And certainly if we look at Kelly Harrigan and what she's doing in master swimming right now, it's indicative of that journey.
My God, world record at 40 years old, 220 in the 200 backstroke. When she was a freshman at Rutgers, we went to Olympic trials, and her best time was 218 in the 200 meter back in 2004. And she's still going. And I don't know if it's just a picture. I haven't seen Kelly personally lately, but she looks super fit, loving going to practice, really just very healthy and enjoying her life.
Coach, one of the things that coaches are talking about, and teachers too, now that I'm in that world, is that it seems like the athletes and the students of today's day don't understand or appreciate the patience of the process and hard work. You know, you and I like to say work works, right? I've always held the idea that kids will work hard. They'll work hard. We just have to show them the pathway towards doing that. Are they distracted a lot in this generation? Yes, we have to account for that. But talk about why it's so important to teach these athletes that discipline, consistency, and working hard over a long period of time is going to pay off. Because we've all heard the phrase click generation. They want something and they get it.
Right. Yeah, delayed gratification of how important that is and how much social media feeds the immediate buzz, the immediate chemical processes in our brain to be able to expect that we can order something on Amazon and it's there the next morning. We can, you know, text a friend a picture, and if we don't get a response back in 30 seconds, we're thinking, oh my God, they're mad at me or what have you, that we're so used to things happening so quickly. But that's not the way great relationships happen. That's not the way people fall in love and get married. That's not the way they build a career. It's delayed gratification. There's a story in the book of the marshmallow experiment, where an experiment that many people listening or watching may know about, but a good thing to share with parents, that a study of kids that could either have a marshmallow immediately or wait for 15 minutes and have two. And they followed these kids for the next 10 years or so, 15 years, and they found the ones that could wait 15 minutes to eat two were much more successful in all kinds of metrics of life. And just that immediacy that we jump towards is really a negative in the long run.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And when we think about, you know, the immediacy that a lot of these kids have with achieving whatever goals they think, they take that process that we've valued so much over time and they try to stretch down. And I certainly was guilty of this as an athlete, and it took a long time for me to figure that out. When you're talking to, let's say, a group of parents who are going to ask you, hey, Coach Warner, how am I going to get my son or my daughter that full scholarship in college? How am I going to get my son or my daughter to make the U.S. national team? Because as silly as that might sound, those are questions that our coaches, boots on the ground, are getting every day. How do we manage that?
Let me hope I get back to the answer to that question directly and completely, but the most important meeting that I ever had in my coaching career was at the Wilton Y, when my friend Dave Riley left me a goal mine of a team. But my condition was the parents group needs to get under control for me to take this job. And I was, you know, 26, 27 years old, but I told the head of the Y that, Skip, I'm not taking this job. This is the Wild West with the difficulty the parents are being. And I say it's the most important meeting of my coaching career in that Skip sat down with the head of the parents group and he explained to her that I was in charge of the program and that whatever I wanted to have happen basically was what would happen. And this was a very strong woman that went on to run for Congress in Connecticut and become very successful. She was successful in her career. It was just the way she was built was to take charge. But she wasn't going to take charge of our team, the Wilton Y Wahoos. And we met again, and she said to me, all right, Chuck, let's start with team colors. What would you like them to be? And I thought, wow, we're really starting at ground zero. But the problem with talking to parents as a coach is the stability of your position as coach. Mm-hmm. Are you working for them? If they don't like what you have to say, are you worried more about keeping your job than doing your job? If you're Mike Murray and you're working for a private school, that's a whole different situation than you have a group of parents that are hiring and firing you. So there's many coaches now in the United States that have their own clubs, that own their own clubs. So they're in a much more authoritative, secure position. And I think when you're in that position, you can speak quite frankly and say, we don't know how good your child's going to be. George, the great George Haynes, maybe the greatest swimming coach in history, at least in his era, he said, I need 2 years of really good work to be able to get an idea of the potential of somebody. And what he was probably saying was, I need to see their tolerance for work. Some kids respond and recover really quickly. I need to see the smile on their face after they've gone doubles 3 days in a row and coming into practice, how much they enjoy it, how much responsibility. You know, there's so many different things that go into being a champion swimmer, which in this book, I lay out my opinion, which starts with talent, opportunity, and competitiveness. If your child is not very competitive, mom, you're barking up the wrong tree. That you know, they're just, their chances of them being a really successful athlete in any sport is not going to be triggered until they find that seed in them, which they might find, but some kids are just destined to be a great artist or dancer or musician or what have you.
I love that. And I'm smiling because in my mind, you know, one of the greatest mentors in my life, Larry Van Wagner, who I coached with at Marist College for 5 years, as the assistant college coach and the club coach. And he used to say tolerance for work, mental aptitude, love for the sport, and competitiveness. And you just hit all four of them.
Yeah. It's more than just how pretty your stroke is.
One of the things, Chuck, that I loved reading in your book as a dad of two young age group swimmers, your time as their chauffeur is so important. Talk about why that relationship building between parents and athletes is critical.
You know, there's a chapter in the book, I think it's chapter 8, which is basically the John Davis, Sean Kelly chapter, which I'm so proud of those guys that in the Wilton Y team, John is one of the leading real troubled youth counselors in the world. Karen Andren on our team, her husband started Swim Across America. Janelle Jorgensen, Stanford grad, Olympian, ran Swim Across America. Kara Devlin, Olympic captain of the U.S. national junior team, worked in a homeless group. Meals on Wheels. Kristen Geary, a part of that group, runs a foundation in New York City, Swim Trident, for kids to help them learn to swim. Just so many good things that those guys are doing. But John really kind of lays it out, shoulder-to-shoulder experiences, that, and the car ride is the perfect example. Joe, what do you think of that sunset? You know, or Joe, what kind of music do you like? What would you like to play today? It's a whole different story, that different approach for a parent than sitting in the driver's seat and saying, let me play you the greatest music ever played. Here goes Led Zeppelin. Here goes Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Here goes whatever. You know, just building your child's self-respect by respecting them and respecting their view of the world. And you know, as a young parent, and it's so much easier to talk to parents when you are a parent, when you're a young coach and you're not a parent, and there's, you know, probably 30, 40% of the United States swim coaches and clubs probably aren't parents, and I think they would have more trouble with it. It's difficult to talk with them because you don't have that same experience. But you know, as a parent, that you could be walking your child in a stroller down the street, and that street changes from any other walk you've ever had. They're going to stop and want to look at the flowers. They're going to stop and want to look at the mailbox. They're going to stop and want to look at the light standing on the side of the street and observe it. And if it's got a horse on it or an animal on it, they're going to be intrigued. And it gets you to relive your whole life over again of remembering what it was like to be a kid. And all these new experiences were so fascinating. So it's so important for parents to step back into that role and really respect their kids and appreciate the journey their children are taking them on again. They wouldn't have that journey otherwise.
You're so spot on. And I'll tell you from the parent's perspective, I was talking to one of my former parents whose daughter just graduated from grad school and had a wonderful swimming career, did some great things, made a U.S. national team. And she said, I can't tell you how much I miss that hour and 15 drive to and from practice.
And Katie Ledecky has said that in her book, that she didn't get her driver's license until she was 20 or 21 years old. And part of the reason was she loved her dad driving her to practice. She loved that time with him.
Yeah, I mean, so remarkable. We just did a panel at Ask a Coach, and I did mention your book. It was called Cultivating Trust. It was myself, Bruce Gemmel, David Arluck, Jean Fink, mom of Bobby Fink, Summer Fink, and Autumn Fink.
Wow.
And a lot of those similar ideas were shared. And so it's great to see that. One of the things that, you know, I really enjoyed in reading this book is a little excerpt that I saved and that I've sent to our parents. And I'm just going to read it from the book because it's really impactful.
Okay.
As for your coaching, remember this sports experience is going to end at some point. Keep looking for opportunities to coach life, just like Matt Biondi's mom did. The sport of swimming should stay in its proper perspective, a sampling of how your loved one is going to handle their life experiences to come. What an impactful perspective for coaches to have, because as you know, we get wrapped up in our daily schedule. We're so focused sometimes. I attended another course at ASCA for my own education. We get so tightened up writing our own microcycle that sometimes we forget why we're doing this. And I think for a lot of coaches, when you're on the pool deck and you're working with that 11-12 group, as I mentioned to you before we jumped on today, I was having so much fun that it was less about making the set quality, which it was, but it was more about these kids are really enjoying this right now, and I'm enjoying it too. So talk about why you included that in your book. I've highlighted it. I've sent it to parents. Why is that perspective so important?
You know, the current Rutgers football coach is on a second time around, and when he was asked what he was going to do differently this time around, and he's did a great job the first time and is doing a great job now, he said, I'm going to focus more on players than plays.
Love that.
And if I were to be coaching over again and have one wish for myself, it would be the same sort of thought, to be focused more on the swimmers than on the swimming, to be focused more on the person. You know, that's 100% the parent job, but it also should be the coach's job. It's just hard to balance both, right? I would be so concerned about the training and the sets. And remember moving from Wilton to Cincinnati and having my own 50 meter pool and thinking we're going to do this stuff long course that we used to do short course, and standing at the side of the pool one day and just so miserable that it was a mess. And Mook Rodenbaugh, an NCAA champion, gets out of the pool. He looks at me, he says, you were a lot of help today. And I just started to laugh. I said, Mook, I didn't know what to do. It was just, I wrote it out the way I thought it should go. And it was just a mess. And I should have stopped that practice. I should have taken care of those guys, maybe just told them to go home and let's start all over again. One of the things that I've really enjoyed about researching and writing books, and researching is more fun really than the writing, which is kind of tedious. But when I wrote 4 Champions, 1 Gold Medal, I had to solicit the help of Tim Shaw, Bobby Hackett, Brian Goodell, and their coaches, as well as be able to connect with Stephen Holland in Australia and his coaches. And I was in Riverfront Stadium when Pete Rose broke Ty Cobb's record for the most hits ever. I got to meet my boyhood hero, Mickey Mantle, because of swimming at the Pan Am Games and stand with him for 20, 30 minutes and talk and have a picture of this together and all that. But I would put with those great sport moments, sitting down and talking with Tim Shaw in a hotel room in Victorville, California for a night and then the next day. Because what was happening for me was I was being able to step back to 30,000 feet and see this sport and this experience from this incredibly insightful, intelligent, eloquent person that was able to describe it. And, you know, it was the Joachim's Greek manifested philosophy of the full person that puts their body, mind, and soul into this effort. Out of that, they become a champion, but not a champion of any particular race or any particular competition, but a champion of themselves. They know they can do things. When I go back and ask a swimmer like you, your age, what did you get most about swimming? One of the usual answers I get is tenacity. That I laugh at people at work when they get to the point that they say, we can't get this done. I just say, you know what I used to do? I used to get up before the sun got up. I go to practice. I go to school all day. I come back. I go back to practice. Then I go do my homework. And then I start all over again. You know, that's the life of a swimmer in a lot of ways. But you learn how to be industrious. You learn that you can get things done inch by inch, half a second by half a second, slowly as time goes on. Tim Shaw, who many people probably won't remember or think about, their story, and I picked up Four Champions, One Gold Medal recently and started to reread it and said, wow, what a book, what a piece of work, just getting through the introduction of this whole history of distance swimming in the world. Who did that? And this some divine energy must have been helping me through that. But Tim, at 16 years old, went to the national championships, broke the world record in the 200, 400, 1500. And if you think back to 1976, we're approaching 50 years ago, that Brian Goodell, 1502, Bobby Hackett, 1503 in the 1500, which would still be in our Olympic trial finals. And I think Bobby or Brian would have made our Olympic team one or two quads ago. How they did that when they were in high school. But my point to all this, and even for Tim, 400 free, they were 350, 351. Now we're 5 seconds faster. In those days, our 500s were 419, 420. We're now 15 seconds faster. What are we missing? That's a whole nother topic and another day. But Mrs. Shaw said to me, when I talked to her, she said, you know, the greatest thing we did was let the sport be Tim's. And when Tim set those three world records, his parents were about 4 hours away in Southern California, because Tim made a deal with his mom and dad after seeing how hard they were on his older brother to never come to his practices, never come to his meets. And I think they did go to the Olympics, but they never saw him break those world records. And I think Mrs. Shaw's words are still right today. Let the sport be your kids. And you take care of helping them through their life and their ups and downs. But it's their sport. It's not yours.
I love it, Coach. And you know, we're getting crunched on time here. But I want to ask you, what do you hope parents take away from this work, this book of how to be a great swim parent?
I grew up in a family of five. I'm the middle child. Once upon a time, families were much bigger. Many times now, parents only have one or two chances. So if you screw it up on the first one and you only have one like I did, then where do you go from there? I hope it gives them a bird's eye view of what this journey might be like. And so before they start stepping in quicksand, stepping in potholes, making mistakes that they're never going to remedy, that they can look down the road and see what is to come and see the benefits that are going to be inherent to their child's experience in the sport. And mom and dad don't need to make it happen. It will happen. Just get together in a good with a good coach in a good club, and everything can be wonderful.
I love it. And coach, what are you most excited about? There's been a lot of changes here at USA Swimming and American swimming in general. What are you excited about moving forward for our sport?
Well, I'm excited if coaches will take a stronger leadership role. If they're going to sit back and only coach their own university team and only coach their own club team and not get involved in their LSC and not get involved in USA Swimming, we're in trouble. Every coach pretty much knows when they come out of a championship meet if their team swam well. You may say to yourself, it's the kid's fault or it's my fault, but you know if it was good or bad. We're delusional sometimes in the United States to think that because have a slight edge over the rest of the world, we're doing well. We're not. We have the most facilities. We have a college program that may get all dismantled now with the NIL. It may become a mess, but we have a college program with scholarships that is the envy of the world, that helps entice our kids in a club system at 10 or 12 to be a part of the American swimming team, to move their way up, not to get the full scholarship, but to get any scholarship or to be on that college swim team. We have so many things going for us: facilities, population, double the number of swimmers, probably four times the number of swimmers as the Australians. We need to set our standards higher, and I would hope our coaches would do that. The USA Swimming changes, I applaud. It's wonderful, but the absence of, there's some intelligent way to say it. The absence of failure is not the presence of success. We just may have cleaned out what we feel like is hurting us. That doesn't mean we're going to do anything better. That's up to us now to do something better. And I applaud the USA Swimming Board of Directors' unanimous decision to do what they did. That's great. And it shows they're on the right track and they're really a good group of people. So I think there's a good chance to move forward, but you got to get coaches out of their own program and into a big picture of the American swimming team, which is a collaborative competition between everybody that we can celebrate every 4 years at the Olympics and say, that's why we are the greatest team in the history of sports, which can only fairly be measured by the Olympic Games and medals won. And they are one of the stakeholders, one of the coaches of the American swimming team. So what are you going to do about it? Are you going to sit back and just watch it on TV? Are you going to try to help somebody get to your state championships, try to help them get to a junior nationals? Every time you do that, you're pushing the competition level up. And you're making somebody go faster to beat your kids. And even though your kids may not be winning those gold medals or medals or at the Olympics or anything else, you're making us better.
I love it. And coach, you could be a small time coach in Alaska and develop an Olympic gold medalist.
We know it's been done, right? Lydia Jacoby has done it. Ian Crocker has done it out of Maine when no one had ever done it before. And the opportunity for kids is just a good coach and a place to practice. Time to do it. That's all. It's not 50 meter pools. It's not big weight rooms. It's nothing like that. Just a coach and a swimmer with a dream.
I love it, coach. And such an important read for all parents and people involved in our sport. How to Be a Great Swim Parent, Coach Warner's latest book. Coach, how can people connect with you if they're interested in learning more?
There's a website, www.chuckwarnerbooks.com. That's a good place to go, or info@chuckwarnerbooks.com. And, you know, we're going to sell them wholesale to coaches. So the more you buy, if you want to buy them for your team or if you want to sell them to parents or whatever you want to do with them, but trying to give the coaches a better deal on it than anybody else, so that if they're really going to be the distributors. But I think if we can get people to either listen to the audio book or read it, and really digest it and probably reread it 2-3 times, right? I mean, it's just some basic lessons, but it's pretty dense with information to think through and read again and again, probably. I think it will help coaches a lot.
Coach Chuck Warner, thank you. We're so grateful to have you on the program. Looking forward to reconnecting soon.
Thanks, Mike.